We'll do it live! Fuck it!
Let me see the thing that says it's being recorded. Oh, it started to record. Hear it. HapGuarded.com. And my name is Mike, and that is Matt. And I'll stop doing this and go back to texting this chick I'm trying to sleep with as Matt introduces the show. Woo!
Yeah. Good intro. It sounds like you're in good spirits. That's nice. Usually you don't sing to start the show.
Here's the thing. For about, probably 5 years now, I've wanted to do a musical version of this show. And, a lot of times when I walk my boys here, I'll sing and I do a little musical interlude here and there on the walkabout episodes of, whatever the fuck this one's called. But I'd like to one day sing the whole thing, because, anybody who considers himself an artist, and you see this on all TV shows, they all do that one shitty episode, which is a musical, and nobody really likes it, but they have a lot of fun, because they got to sing and dance and be gay, like, happy gay, and so I'm going to do the same thing one day.
Okay, I will be looking forward to that. This week on MMA and Stuff on HalfGutter.com, we're going to discuss MMA and Stuff. We're going to talk UFC on Fox, Shevchenko versus Pena, Ronda Rousey's possible retirement from MMA again, the Conor McGregor interview on pay-per-view and Dana White's response to it, another USADA failure, World Series of Fighting, and even UFC Fight Night this coming Saturday with Dennis Bermudez versus the Korean Zombie headlining. I thought we could do the usual drill and start with UFC on Fox from this past Saturday night.
No, I don't want to do that. I want to talk about.
Go ahead.
I got fucking nothing. I was just being disagreeable. I'm curious about the World Series of Fighting thing, though. I don't know what that's going to be about. By the way, anybody who's listening, all three of you, there's a podcast out there called The Dollop, D-O-L-L-O-P. I think it's one of the greatest podcasts ever. Like, I listen to a lot of podcasts, mostly comedians and stuff like that. This is two dudes who are both professional comedians, but what they do is one of them takes something from history, like a historical fact, like a weird story from history. The other guy has no idea what's going on, kind of like this show. And the one guy reads it all and says, like, this is what really happened. And the other guy just reacts. It's fucking hilarious. It's entertaining, educational. You'll learn about, like, the five guys are all involved in, like, building jetpacks over 30 years in the United States. Just all kind of Nazi camps in the United States during the 1930s. It's just really fascinating, and I'm sure we can totally, increase their listeners, given they were, like, one of the top five podcasts at one point. But we're important, so go with it.
So, is it based on, like a dollop of sour cream?
I have no clue.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
a dollop?
I
that's a food term to me.
Well, it could just be dollop in the sense of, like, it's, like, a little bit. It's
okay.
a helping of. I don't really know. I only discovered it in the past 10 days. And
okay.
I'm just hooked. I mean, it's great because I got like 200 back episodes to listen to, which helps my life. But it's just, it's really, they're just really good and spontaneous comedians. And I think people should check it out. So, again, for the three, maybe five on a good week people listening to this, check that out.
I will. This past weekend, UFC Fox on 23, technically. There's been 23 shows on Big Fox. Time flies. This was at the Pepsi Center in Denver, Colorado, the hometown of Donald Cerrone, who we'll get to in a little bit.
A beautiful town, by the way, everybody. A very beautiful town.
Mountain-esque.
I was there for 10 hours back in December. After Vegas with UFC 207. It's just really nice and clean, except for the bums everywhere. But they have lots of marijuana, so no one really cares.
Attendance was 13,233 with a total gate of $1,020,434. So great attendance, good gate. The show itself, ratings-wise, didn't do well. It was one of the lower-rated Fox cards in the last couple of years. But I kind of expected that with the main event of Valentina Shevchenko defeating Juliana Pena by submission. She won with an armbar in the second round. A competitive fight. I mean, it kind of went back and forth. Pena almost had an armbar in the first round, then got submitted with an armbar herself in the second. So now Shevchenko is the number one contender for the next bantamweight title shot against Amanda Nunes. After the fight, Nunes got into the cage and the two tried to trash talk a little bit, but both were using English as a second language, and they were both kind of smiling and didn't really seem to know what the other person was talking about. So I don't think it did a lot to hype the fight, but they gave it the old college try anyway.
It's as good as they could probably do, and honestly, I think that, I mean, there's always going to be guys like Connor or Ronda who are just transcendent in their approach to the sport, but I think just your casual fan, when they see people kind of giving a shit, that is better than, you know, just the, you know, Joe, I'll fight whoever they want me to, and, you know, I'm going to give 110%, and I can hear the jiggling of a microphone in the background, Joe, that's okay, I don't really blame you for that, that just happens, and, you know, it's good. Instead, you know, they try to give a little shit talking, and the UFC can somehow, again, overcome the microphone sounds that they hear. You know, it'll be a real accomplishment to have the gay Brazilian chick face off against the Russian chick and do any kind of business with it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Is this fight going to draw at all? I mean, at a certain point, Nunez will, if she keeps killing people, I mean, if you think about it, she kind of retired Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey in a weird way, and that hasn't got much hype, and nobody's really talked about it, but she's kind of got at least that going for her. In the cage, she's been super impressive recently.
Look, she's done as much as she could possibly do in her position. She's gone out, dominated probably the two biggest stars in women's MMA history. She's looked like a goddess. You know, she's beaten everybody she needs to beat, except for Kat Zingano. She tries, I think there's something to the fact that, she gets one of the most unusual bumps in publicity in all of UFC, and that it's not just that she's on camera when she fights, but when her partner fights, she's also on camera. So, like, she gets, like, say three for her and three for Nina Ansaroff. That's like six times a year. Every other month she's kind of on camera and she seems good-natured about it. I'm not saying she'll be like a horrible draw, but you know, we've yet to really see women draw who aren't on some level either a sex symbol or they have a, you know, that Holly Holm weird all-American girl thing. Like, this is almost like getting kind of like Jose Aldo with a little more personality to draw. And they've had trouble with Jose Aldo, and he's not a gay woman. So we'll see. I mean, I give her credit. It's up to the UFC now to, you know, they've been handed, I don't want to say chicken shit, they've been handed day-old chicken that's not expired, but it's getting close, and they got to turn into a really delicious chicken salad served at Scargo Cafe.
So this actually technically would be a rematch, if anybody remembers, because Nunes beat Shevchenko three fights ago.
And the at that time was one of the biggest shows of all time on the undercard.
UFC 196, yeah.
Like, all she's done is fight on the biggest cards possible and dominate and look good. So, you know, if people don't get behind her, then it's just a sign that Trump's racist, xenophobic America is taking over.
Is Brazil on the list? I think they're okay.
It will be once Trump finds out that, actually, no, he likes fake tits. He probably loves fucking Brazil. So, yeah, they're good. Come on, get it together, Islam. Put it in your doctrine. Fake titties are good. You'll be in the United States in no problem. No time. I'll stop.
Who do you think wins the rematch? Because the one thing I notice with Shevchenko is I think she's a little small for bantamweight. She'd probably be more like a flyweight probably if that division existed. And when you saw Nunes and Shevchenko in the cage together, Nunes just looks so much bigger.
I 100% agree with that take. I, you know, in some respect, again, having watched Nunes – dominate Sarah Kaufman. But, you know, beat Holly Holm convincingly, take out Juliana Pena. I thought pretty damn easily. I mean, for a chick that's a striker by trade to go out there and just tap a grappler by trade, that says a lot about her. But, you know, Nunez is a champion. She's done what she's needed to do. She's looked dominant. And sometimes it's really difficult to get past that mentally, because when you see somebody just being great, you're just like, well, this person's great. They're just not going to lose, blah, blah, blah. It happens if you don't want to admit it, but I do think you're right there when it comes to the size difference. I think that's the big key here. I think Nunez is a true 135er who, you know, she's already talking about going up to 145 because everybody in the world thinks that's the new thing to do. And Shevchenko probably should be, 125er. She's at 35, and Nunez is just so ripped and cut and athletic. I mean, I would say steroid-looking, but that's not really fair to say. I mean, just she's got that very cut, athletic look about her, and I think, she won last time because she's bigger, and she'll probably win next time because she's bigger.
And where do you think Pena goes from here?
I have no idea.
Well, hopefully not to the bar.
What? Unless you're, for all the men's testicles out there, let's pray she doesn't go to the bar. I don't know. Like, the fact that she was ranked number 2 in the UFC, like, I think number 3 by, like, USA Today, MMA Junkies, horseshit ratings, whatever that means. It just kind of looks at the dearth of quality at women's bantamweight. I don't think she was all that really technically refined as a fighter. I think she's someone that, I said last time, that Ronda Rousey could beat. Holly Holm scrambled up to 145. I'm sure there's somebody that can find to have her fight. I don't know, Jessica, I think she beat her before, but she's got like 7 losses in a row. She's still top 15 because that's what the division is for women. They'll find somebody. She'll probably fight, I don't know, Sarah McMahon. Yeah, she should fight Sarah McMahon. That's what she should do.
Okay.
Hello, dog.
Sounds good. Yeah. Then in the semi-main event, we had Jorge Masvidal defeating Donald Cowboy Cerrone by TKO at 1 minute in the second round. Masvidal looked good. Cerrone didn't look as good and got rocked at the end of the first round. And I thought he was out. I thought the fight should have been stopped at the end of the first round. But Herb Dean kind of had a weird stoppage. It looked like he ended the fight with about a second left, and then he said the fight wasn't over. Cerrone sat down, had a glazed look. If it were me, I would have tried to stop him from going out again, but that's me. And then he just basically got put up against the cage and just took a ton of shots until Dean stopped it.
Yeah, it was very odd in the sense that Herb Dean didn't stop it at the end of the first round when I thought he should have. And it did seem like he jumped in before he heard the bell. But it's also very possible that he saw, you know, an official make a movement or something like that towards the bell. And he thought it was over, or maybe heard something. And then in the second round, when he actually stopped it, Cerrone was covering his head well. He's taking a lot of shots to the body, which aren't pleasant or anything like that. But I didn't see him getting those brutal headshots like he had taken before. So I was kind of like, huh, so now you decide to stop it? Like, you didn't stop it before when the dude was actually physically in danger of, you know, having his long-term health affected. Instead, you waited till his, you know, his kidneys would be sore. But, I mean, look, you can't take it away from Masvidal. It is two lightweights fighting at 170. Masvidal looked great. He looked, I'm easily the greatest performance of his entire career, the biggest win, the best he's ever looked. Cerrone, who knows? And people are going to say, oh, he's fought too much and shit like that. I can't say that's a factor because it's Cerrone. That's who he is. I think he took a shot to the body probably at one point, and that likely led to the downfall of his life, as is always the case.
Yeah, to me it's just a bummer for Cerrone because it was like he was in line for a big fight, and again, he rushed this fight. And then even if he beat Masvidal convincingly, he still would have been in the same spot anyway because Masvidal isn't that big a name. It wasn't like he was going to get a title shot jump the line ahead of Damian Maia or I guess, I mean, the next title fight's Woodley Thompson, but this wasn't going to get him there anyway. So I wish he had just kind of hung in there and waited for, you know, Nick Diaz or Robbie Lawler. I know we've been over this, but it was like, I'm not going to say I told you so, but it was like, I wish he hadn't taken that fight because it's going to cost him some money and possibly a title shot and possibly more money, which is why he fights to begin with so much. So kind of a bummer for him. But Masvidal has called out either Nate or Nick Diaz after the fight. He's looking for a big fight. What would you do with Masvidal next?
I mean, either one of those would be a good fight. The Diaz brothers, though, they're the Diaz brothers. I mean, if fucking Nick wouldn't fight Donald Cerrone, which would have been a huge fight for him, is he going to fight Jorge Masvidal? I don't think so. I mean,
I think for both of them now, it's all just money. If the money's right, they'll fight anybody.
Yeah, and the money's not going to be right with Jorge Masvidal. You know, right. It's just not. It would be a really great battle of very, very similar human beings. You know, both the Diaz brothers, let's pretend they're one person, because they are. The way that they have this street mentality against Jorge Masvidal, who also has a street mentality plus a street background. The way that they both stand very upright in box. I think it could be a really good fight. It just won't happen because the Diaz brothers have it in their head that they're worth $10 million a fight or some shit. Or in Nate's case, 20. It won't happen. So, I mean, to me, Masvidal slides right into basically the Cerrone position. You give him Robbie Lawler is probably, you know, the next fight for him. It would be a really good stylistically they match up. Again, you just look at Masvidal as the next Cerrone. What the fuck is wrong with you, dog? Get off of me, you son of a bitch. All right, let's go ahead. Get off. What is wrong with you, you hyper damn puggle? That's my cord from my headphones. Oh, okay. Masvidal versus Robbie Lawler.
Puggles are the worst.
They are the worst. They're a vicious, evil breed. You're an abomination. You're God-bred. God only wanted dogs to be purebred. I'm like the Nazi of dogs, and you're a mutt. You're an affront. You're an abomination. You're like Frankenstein's monster.
Some breeds should not be mixed.
Especially when they fucking shit on the fucking floor, and I fucking wake up in 5:45 in the morning and step into dog shit with my bare feet and feel it go between my toes and come out the other side like Play-Doh or like a sausage being pressed. It was awful. And then I had to clean that shit off, literally that shit off, as I get ready to catch a train 20 minutes later. You bastard puggles.
And you know what's even worse? You don't know which one did it.
No, I know who. I know exactly which one did it.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, I know when there's that kind of poop and stuff. I know what their poops look like. One of them has solid poops. One of them has a little more runny.
Do they eat the same stuff?
Yeah, just one of them. One of them has a hip issue with his right hip, so I think poop comes out in a different manner. The other one is just a little healthier. So
it wouldn't affect the consistency of it.
Well, I don't know, but they have different poops. I've spent a lot of time looking at their buttholes as poop emerges, like some sort of sea creature bursting forth from the sea as it gasps for air, and so I know what their poops look like.
Do your puggles eat their own?
Yes, they do. It's disgusting.
So weird. Like, ours will go outside. We have, like, a line, and we'll let her go out, do her business. If we just let her out, she'll take off, and I got to chase her all around the neighborhood and through the woods. But we let her out, and she'll go, and then she'll just kind of hang out and eat dog poop for 20 minutes. Then she comes in and drinks water, and all the remnants from her mouth and face fall into her water bowl every day.
What a podcast this is. Like,
prior to the Masvidal and Cerrone fight, we had Francis Ngannou defeating old Andre Arlovsky by TKO at 132 of the first round. I've got mixed feelings on Ngannou because, granted, Arlovsky was a step up in competition, but Arlovsky's so up and down. This is his fourth loss in a row, and three of them have been by knockout, and he's got that glass chin from 4 or 5 years ago. At the same time, Ngannou was super impressive. The two shots he hit him with weren't even like full power. They were almost like these short little arm punches. He didn't have a lot of force in them, and they just laid out Arlovski like nothing. So it was an impressive win for Ngannou, but I'd still like to see him, you know, go a couple rounds and face a wrestler and have somebody take him down and see if he can get back up, and does he have any kind of ground game. People are kind of anointing him the next heavyweight champ, like he's this unstoppable guy, and he's been impressive so far, but he hasn't really fought anybody that's pushed him either.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of in a no-win position. It's, you know, a little bit of foresight, definitely in hindsight, because, yeah, he knocked out Arlovski. It's kind of a name, but it was so quick that I don't think anyone's going to walk away going, yeah, I was really impressed. Like, he did something no one's ever done before. And you've seen that before in the past, like when Velasquez just brutally knocked out Nogueira. Even though we knew Nogueira was, you know, shot, it was kind of like, wow, he really, really looked great. Plus, Velasquez had the pedigree behind him. And Ngannou doesn't have that. You know, he did what he needed to do. You can't fault him for that. He's going to get thrown to better competition. You know, Barnett or somebody like that, maybe the Black Beast could work. I don't know.
The winner, Travis Brown and Derek Lewis.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think it's kind of a weird deal where it's almost like people look at him and they think, and I know people don't want to talk about it, but it doesn't matter. I don't care. Because he's black and ripped, people think this is the next generation. Everybody's kind of has this assumption that, you know, the one thing that's missing from MMA is your elite level black athlete, American black athlete. We think, oh, you know, we look at, what if Michael Vick or LeBron James or any of these guys? It's always black guys. And we haven't, you know, we've only seen...
Well, John Jones, you could argue John Jones.
Yeah, and we see, and people will point to John Jones and go, see? And we'll be like, oh, yeah, fuck, like, that dude, you know, just boozing all the time, and he's still dominating. What if somebody was, like, really dedicated and gave a shit about the sport, what would they do? And so when they see somebody that's, although I say American black, and Ngannou is actually French, but then they see that kind of that cut, ripped black guy who's big and shows the stereotypical explosiveness, I think people want to be like, yeah, he can just overwhelm and he can take it to the next level. But I think when you get to that top level, you got to have that real technique. And even at heavyweight, where it's not as important as it is, obviously, at featherweight, but you look at the two top two guys, technique-wise, at heavyweight and Velasquez and Miosic, yes, they're both white, but they're also just very technically skilled. Like, these are guys who are not going out there and winning on athleticism. They're winning on the old-school technique and just good old-fashioned American grit. And they try really hard, and they work really hard, and that just makes the biggest difference. So, I mean, we'll see with Ngannou. I can't fault it. Again, he did what he needed to do. He knocked out a fucking Russian in 30 seconds or whatever and made an enemy of Donald Trump, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, again, I still want to see him, like, fight somebody who's going to push him. You know what I mean? Right now, his career record is 10-1. He's only been fighting just over 3 years. He's 30, so he started late, right? He doesn't have any, like, real, like, wrestling background from what I can tell and what I've read about him.
Of course not.
So I think he wanted to be a boxer is what I've heard. And he got into MMA somehow. So it's like, does he have any ground game? Do we even know? Like, could Barnett just take him down and tap him out in, like, a couple minutes?
Yeah, Barnett was, like, one of the first names that came to mind. The guy who would have been, like, the kind of the best test for him, who's not even in the company anymore, but I just thought of it, would be Jared Rosholt. Just a guy who is nothing but wrestling, but who doesn't, like, he won't challenge in the way that Barnett would, which is wrestling combined with everything else. You know, Rosholt is just pure wrestling. So if you can deal with that, okay, maybe I'll give you a little bit of credit. Barnett, his problem statement is Arlovski. He's just so old and broken, but I can see that fight happening. Or Stefan Struve, or... Yes, yeah, have him fight Stefan Struve. See how that shit works out.
Rothwell wouldn't be bad either. I know you hate Rothwell, but... I mean, for where Rothwell's at, where Ngannou's at...
No, actually, that's a perfect fight.
I'd be okay with that. Ngannou says he wants Kane.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he does. Everybody wants somebody who's, like, you know, one of the top three dudes in the division. Miocic, Velasquez, Cain, Velasquez, and Verdum. But, yeah, I think Ngannou's got to beat somebody who isn't, that elite. So,
but well, I mean, would you give him a shot against Velasquez?
No, I mean, if it's the only fight available, sure, but I think...
I mean, competitively, like if they fought.
If Velasquez actually makes it into the cage, no. Like, unless it's one of those... Even if Velasquez has a torn rotator cuff, when that dude steps into the cage, I'm just going to always bet on him. Yeah. It's just...
He's really good at fighting other large men.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be the greatest heavyweight of all time by a landslide if it wasn't for the fact that he can't stay healthy, so that'll always knock him down a peg. And now there's a Mike and Mike commercial on TV. I don't know what it's for, but they have a very delicious-looking hamburger. It's an Applebee's. Oh, fuck that.
Your takes on food are interesting.
I kind of like Applebee's and TGI Fridays and places like that. I'm such a suburbanite. I love that shit. Not as much as I love Scargo Cafe. If you haven't tried it yet, people, you're missing out.
Yeah, if the dozens and dozens of people listening to this are on the Cape, stop by, say hi. In the opener, Jason Knight defeated Alex Caceres by submission with a rear naked choke. I mean, this looked like Jason Knight from his prime in ECW. Really good on the ground. And just able to take the back and sub Caceres. Fun opener, exciting two-round fight. Knight looked good. Not sure where he goes from here in the featherweight division, which is pretty stacked right now. I mean, there's a lot of guys in the featherweight division he could fight, but he did call out the Korean Superboy, Wonder Boy, whatever he's called, Do Ho Choi. Superboy, I think, is what they call him, right? That's who he called out after the fight, which would be a fun fight, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense to me. I really can't get past the fact that his name is the same as an ECW jobber. Every time I see him fight him, it's like, I just think, is this fucking for real? Like, that dude that was, like, part of, I don't know, Raven's flock or whatever the fuck it would have been.
I think he managed the Pitbulls or something.
So whatever it was, I'm like, I think it's the same dude that... In my mind, they both have black hair, so they're in white, so they're the same dude. And, I mean, he beat Bruce Leroy, and Leroy's not a joke. You know, he's a real dude. So, I mean, it's an impressive win, but I just can't get past the fact that it's Jason fucking Knight. And apparently, that's his real name. Like, he was born with that name. So, that's a really good name to have. So, fuck him.
Anything on the prelim card or fight pass that caught your eye?
Not off the top of my head. I remember it going back and forth. Like, there'd be some really, really good fights with good finishes. You can check out halfguarded.com and tell you if you should or shouldn't watch it. And then there would be fights that were just, like, total butt. So, like, it was a mishmash. Nothing jumped out. You know, we didn't have a Do Ho Choi, Cub Swanton, like, fight on the undercard or anything like that. So, go on about your lives.
Yeah, I mean, probably the most important fight on the undercard was Sun Sao defeating Aljamain Sterling. It was a split decision, very close, very competitive fight. But again, it wasn't a fight you need to go out of your way to see. It wasn't super exciting or anything, but that probably had the most impact as far as rankings and divisions go. There was also a Bellator card, which we don't really need to talk about, this past Friday, where... Nothing really notable happened.
Was that David Rickles in the main event?
Semi-main event. In the main event, what's his name there? The young assassin. Melvin Gillard weighed 180 pounds against Chidi Njikalani. And I think he lost 30-24, like 30-25.
I don't If I watch it, I have no recollection of it.
It was a bad fight, and the scoring was really weird. Like, I didn't think most of those rounds were 10-8s, but one judge gave all three rounds a 10-8 score to Njikawani. It was weird. But David Rickles looked good, and he did the mannequin challenge like 6 months after it was cool when it for his entrance, so that was dated.
I saw the mannequin challenge done at the Korean basketball all-star game. Yeah, they were playing like, I don't know what fucking quarter, second quarter. Obviously, they, I assume they planned it out. If they didn't, that'd be really weird. After somebody threw up a brick, everybody stopped and paused for the mannequin challenge, and the crowd went, yay! They clapped, and I'm like, Asians are all dorks by nature.
Were you watching the Korean basketball all-star game?
I saw a clip of it. And yes, of course I watched the Korean all-star basketball game. I'm not some sort of Trump-esque bigot. I follow sports of all
nations. Was it the North Korean or the South Korean?
I get the North Korean coming to me via bootleg. I'll talk about it later.
How about Submission Underground 3? You see any of that?
Nope.
No. All right.
I think
Dylan Danis won, and he called
out John Jones. I heard
Jones. Yeah, he called him a fucking bitch.
Which you know, it's a fair assessment.
Who would you favor in a submission only matchup between John Jones and Dylan Danis?
Jones would get fucking destroyed.
Even with the size difference.
Even with it wouldn't be close. Just beyond a mismatch. The techniques that some of these guys like Dylan Danis and AJ and so on and so forth use, they're on a level that MMA guys cannot comprehend, especially with their ability to just dive on leg locks. You can't tap them with a leg lock, which is, you know, the danger of a leg lock is always it's a quote-unquote 50-50 proposition where you're grabbing their leg, but they have a chance to grab yours. These guys are so good, and they've worked it so much, and a lot of them are all John Danaher's students out of Hendel Gracie School there in New York City. I think that it would just be a massacre. I don't know if John Jones would last 5 minutes.
Okay, interesting. See, I take your word for it. I don't know. So also this past Saturday, we had the highly anticipated Conor McGregor and Ariel Helwani interview airing on internet pay-per-view.
Very successful form of pay-per-view, by the way, is internet pay-per-view. Everyone knows that internet pay-per-view has been nothing but successful. You can ask Flow TV that one.
During the interview in Manchester, England, in front of about 5,000 fans, it was a sellout. McGregor said the following. He called Nate Diaz a fucking pussy because he acted like Floyd Mayweather's bitch, said that he supported some sort of union for fighters, but at the same time dissed GSP for joining the MMA, said that he would have fought at featherweight in March if UFC had asked him to, later said fuck the UFC when it came to promoting a boxing match between himself and Floyd Mayweather. Dana White responded to some of the stuff Conor said and essentially said McGregor versus Mayweather promotion without the UFC would be an epic fail, and kind of cast a shot at McGregor saying McGregor doesn't want to even go there, essentially, which was basically threatening legal action without so much saying those words. Did you catch any of the Conor thing or any of Dana's response to it?
I saw a few quotes here and there. It was, I don't give a shit. Conor, I think, was deliberately saying things to get people talking. And absolutely, not just like his normal way, but it's like, fuck the UFC, fuck boxing, fuck the fans, fuck the, it's like, he gave good sound bites and people reported it. We did not. Mostly because I'm lazy. But still, like, it was just so transparent, and I'm like, I don't care. As a Liverpool fan, fuck you, Manchester, for giving this guy 5,000 ticket sales. You fucking Red Devil pieces of shit. Fuck, mank twat. But it's just, I don't give a shit. Fuck you, Ariel Helwani, for going along with this. No one will ever believe anything you ever have to say about Conor McGregor again, because the guy gave you money to talk to him. It's Conor at his worst. It reminds me of, like, when he went on his bitchy Twitter rant when the UFC pulled him from UFC 200, and he just whined and bitched and moaned, and at the end of the day, the UFC beat his ass down. He didn't get to go to UFC 200. He had to wait a couple months. The UFC won that battle. They're always, you know, I shouldn't say they always win, because with the new ownership, who knows, but just, I can't say I'm sick of it, because Conor will just annoy me, and then I'll have a fight signed, and I'll get interested, because we'll have some funny shit, like, you know, a week or two out. But for right now, I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Like, it's so stupid. That said, Dana White's wrong, because if there's one fight that Conor McGregor could promote on his own without the UFC and be really successful, it would be a boxing match with Floyd Mayweather. That has enough cachet amongst the mainstream media that I think it would be huge, but otherwise, you can be fighting Manny Pacquiao and no one will care.
I kind of took it as White was saying it would be an epic fail, not as as a promotion going without the UFC. He more meant it would be an epic fail to even try, because they would just litigate the shit out of McGregor. And he was basically saying, don't go down that path. Don't do it if you know what's good for you.
Yeah, and that's probably fair. And, I mean, it's all the rage right now for anybody involved in the UFC to go out and get their boxing license. And clearly there's somebody, some lawyer behind all this. Maybe it'll end up being viable. I'll say this, though. It doesn't really matter. You know, if you're in the UFC and you're making pretty good money, yeah, you might get one big payday if you're doing boxing. Even Jose Aldo, who got his boxing license or whatever the fuck he's trying to do, who's a nobody. But still, even nobodies in boxing get seven-figure deals sometimes because the economics are so fucking weird. But you guys are going to get murdered. Like, this isn't even... Right. Like, they're barely level... Like, the difference between myself and Conor McGregor when it comes to boxing is less than between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. Like, it would just be that embarrassing. Like, I probably would barely do worse to the general public against Floyd than Conor would. Floyd, this is what he does. He's a fucking genius at boxing. He's done it for decades. You know, don't do other people's shit. It's just because you're good at basketball doesn't mean you can play football or baseball.
It's kind of like John Jones and Dylan Danis.
It's very similar to that. Yeah, it's just, you know, Conor's a god at MMA. He fights Conor, and if Conor fought Floyd in the MMA and decided to only stand with him for the whole fight, I think he'd beat him, just due to the angles and the number of strikes and everything you have to think about. But in a pure boxing match, I mean, for fuck's sake, Floyd's not the greatest fighter ever, but he's definitely one of the best lighter weight fighters who's ever competed. And Conor McGregor got outboxed by Nate Diaz. Just shut the fuck up, Conor, you fucking dumb Mick.
It's funny, though, the way, I mean, I guess it's everywhere, how you can spin things. Because the arguments are out there. You know, Conor's bigger, he hits harder, Floyd's old, he's 40 now, he hasn't fought much. It's amazing how people can spin things and you can build a narrative up and make it be like, yeah, maybe Conor could knock him out. He hits really hard, he's bigger, he's younger, he's faster. It's like, no. It doesn't work that way. He's never boxed in his life and he's fighting the best boxer of this generation. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm bigger than Floyd Mayweather also. It doesn't mean I'm going to land a shot that knocks him out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, come on. I mean, it's insulting to Floyd in the same way that Floyd thinking he could come in to MMA or, more accurately, probably wrestling or even kickboxing and think he's going to do well. It's just, it ain't your sport. You're not trained for it. you take most of the 120, 115-pound guys who are, I'll say, Olympic boxers, which doesn't mean they're all that great, but they're just technically sound, they'd all light up Connor. That's just, yeah. It's just the nature of the beast. It doesn't mean shit about Connor's ability to fight. It's just different sports. If Connor done only boxing for his entire life since age of six, maybe he'd be a good professional boxer. But he didn't do that. He's just he's a cage fighter, and that's great. He's made tens of millions of dollars. He's one of the greatest ever who's ever done it. That should be enough. I don't know. Like, I mean, I know it's hard to say no to a 9-figure payday or whatever he thinks he's going to get, but I had to fucking figure that one out. Like, that's how much money's at stake, and you have to wait a second. I know 7 is million. 8 is okay. Give me 9. Ooh, that's really big. And but it's all bullshit gamesmanship.
Yeah, I agree. The comparison I always use to like bring it back for people is Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player who ever lived. Some people might argue that, but I think most people agree.
That's accurate. Yes.
Yes. Couldn't.
Maybe better prime, than that fairy Larry Bird.
In his athletic prime, could not make it out of Double-A baseball.
It's funny you said that because I was just thinking, like, it's like Michael Jordan, and you brought up the analogy because you're very smart. And yeah, and Michael Jordan is basically gifted to get to Double-A even. And he was competitive-ish, but that was at a level where
Guy could dunk from the foul line.
He
was an athletic freak.
And he was
competitive as whole hell. And he couldn't hit a baseball if his life depended on it.
And
he never even faced good pitchers. He was facing single A and double A pitchers.
And
he was probably nervous as shit trying to pitch to Michael Jordan.
And he's the greatest who's ever done basketball. Like, I think it was, I'm pretty sure I just watched Bill Burr's new special on Netflix. He didn't need the plug. But it was basically that Michael Jordan's like the Adolf Hitler of sports, kind of like there's just this level where nobody talks about any modern basketball player being like, oh, he's the next Magic Johnson. He's the next Dr. J or any of that. It's always, he's the next Jordan. He's the next Jordan. LeBron's the next Jordan. Kobe's the next Jordan. This is the greatest who's ever done basketball. And yeah, when he went to a different sport, a sport which he had played before, which he in theory cared about, setting aside his possible gambling issues. And yeah, he made it to Double A and he wasn't even all that great at Double A. He was okay, but he was just there, and they're gonna, it's like same with Connor. Like, yeah, maybe if he fought like in some Golden Gloves level competition, he'd do okay, but this is fucking Floyd Mayweather. That'd be like Michael Jordan saying, yeah, I'm going to leave the basketball court, train for a couple, I'm going to do a couple months of batting practice, and then I'm going to face Randy Johnson. I'm sure this will totally go well. You'd be like, are you out of your fucking mind? This is stupid. So
I think people watching from home have a warped sense of how easy or how difficult it is. If you're a professional athlete in any sport, you're in the top 0.0001% of athletes. Like, if you make it, if you're a backup quarterback in the NFL, you're one of the 64 best quarterbacks in the world. And we joke about backup quarterbacks and how bad they suck and all this stuff. They're better than a million other guys who have played quarterbacks in their life between high school and college and couldn't make it in the pros and got cut. I mean, people, we're just used to watching such high-level sports that we take it for granted.
Yeah, I think I may have come up with this one of my own. I'll take credit for it. But it's basically...
Probably mine.
Shut up. You motherfucker. With a good restaurant. But it's like, if you take a guy who washed out in the minor leagues of baseball, he's probably someone that in his hometown is looked at as the unquestionable greatest high school player they ever had.
Right.
And like, you take, like, anybody ever went to school, like, everybody in school, even my school, which is like a dork school, there's always like the one kid that was like really great at sport. You're like, that guy could, he can maybe make it to, like, you know, college. And, like, the best guy from your again, like, the best guy from your high school is maybe lucky to be in a Division I college, and obviously he's very unlikely to be in any school that's even close. He's never even sniffed the NFL. The closest, most great high school athletes get to the NFL is date raping some cheerleader when she's 19. It's just a huge step up, and we should just all respect it. Again, everything is so specialized. Everything in life, everything in the world is specialized. You know, people aren't just doctors or, you know, Ben Carson, set aside his politics, the guy's a fucking genius at what he did, but it was neonatal brain surgery. Like, that's a really specific line of work. He probably isn't very good at being, like, a pediatrician or anything like that. It's like that everywhere. We're all so specialized, and in combat sports, it's happened even more. We talk about Dylan Danis versus, you know, a really good wrestler versus Jon Jones versus Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. And, you know, Floyd would lose to the top kickboxers. Like, top kickboxers lose to the top grapplers. The top grapplers lose to the top wrestlers. The wrestlers lose to the guys who can stuff a takedown, get striking. It's just a gigantic wheel that goes around. And I don't know why people give a fuck. I mean, it's kind of, I guess, fun to talk about. But who gives a shit, people? Just fucking appreciate things for what they are.
Dana White was on UFC Unfiltered this past week and was just discussing Ronda Rousey's future. White said, "I think she's probably done." He was also on TMZ, Sports, whatever, and basically reiterated the same thing. He thinks she's done fighting, is retired, and will never fight again. Do you agree with White's assessment?
I mean, she should be done. I have no idea if she's done. It's up to her, which is a cop-out answer. But, obviously Dana's there. He knows a lot more than any of us do. It's very odd for him to say this out loud. But it's also, Dana White is, he's like the Donald Trump of MMA. He's just doing things different. You know, promoters aren't supposed to talk like this. But he's like, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to be hyper-honest all the time. Not that Trump is, but Dana is. Dana always gives his absolute true opinion of everything, and in his opinion, she's done.
Do you think he was, like, overstepping his bounds, though? Like, shouldn't she say that? Like, to me, it was like, what are you doing? It's like, let her make that announcement. Or is he, like, kind of trolling her and just trying to see where her head's at? Does he have a motive in doing it?
It could be that he's trolling her, but I don't think it's that, only because Dana says shit like this all the time about a lot of fighters. Mm. And so I don't think it's not unique to Ronda. And I just watched Korean Zombie tap out Leonard Garcia with a twister. What the fuck?
That's funny.
I think that, you know, it's really just that Dana just, he's like this very odd character where he's super powerful, obviously incredibly rich, and he's dedicated to what he does, but he doesn't seem to necessarily show that he thinks about it all the time. Because this is the kind of question that shouldn't catch anybody off guard if you're in his position. And so you should think you have an idea of what you're going to say. If somebody says, "Is Ronda Rousey done?" You should have an answer. And Dana's answer was, yeah, I think so. When I talked to her, she just didn't seem very interested in it.
And that's probably done.
Yeah, exactly. He's just totally guessing. And, again, it's very Trump-like. Instead of giving the very stock answer, which we're all used to, he's doing things differently. And just like Trump, hey, it's fucking working for him, but, you know, we're used to what I think is actually the appropriate answer, which is, I don't really know. I spoke with Ronda. She's got a lot of things to work out. She'll make her decision, and when that decision comes down, I'll respect it, and we'll move forward. But no, instead, it's, she's probably done. Like, what the?
I think he even said, I don't think she has it anymore.
Yeah.
It was almost like goading her, I felt like. It was just strange, especially based on she was a huge part in, I don't want to say huge part in building the company, but she was their biggest draw there for a couple of years.
Oh, I think she was absolutely one of the big cogs in making this
absolutely
a $4 billion enterprise.
And well, when I say building, I think like Tito Liddell, like sure, the company was built. She took it to another level. She wasn't one of the people who built the foundation of it and got it on Spike and did that sort of thing. But yeah, she was a huge star and brought it much more mainstream than it was before. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, and I mean Dana, he sounds like us. Just like guys who are like intelligent, who can make decent estimations, but we're still kind of, you know, half guessing, half looking at the information in front of us. It's like, no, dude, like you're worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Your job is to run this shit. You're the Roger Goodell of the UFC. And your answer is, yeah, I think she's probably done. You know, I don't think she's got the eye of the tiger anymore. Good for her. Whatever. It's like, well, that's not a fucking answer. That's not even a good cover answer. That's like Roger Goodell being like, yeah, Tom Brady, yeah, I think he cheated, but we'll see. And be like, wait, what? Like, you can't just leave us hanging there. You're the one dude on Earth who should have an idea, and if your answer is, fuck it, we'll see what's going to happen, that doesn't fill me with a lot of confidence.
Also on UFC Unfiltered, White reversed course and said that Jon Jones would likely main event his first show back and immediately get a light heavyweight title shot July.
What a shock.
Once his suspension is up. Initially, must have been right after UFC 200, White said that there was no way he could main event Jones again because he can't depend on him, he can't trust him. He's a fuck up. He'll screw up again. I can't put all this money and promotion into a Jon Jones fight and have him not make the fight. And then all of a sudden he does a 180, which is interesting. But I wonder if it relates anything with the Rousey deal where they need main eventers. Jones now behind Connor's their second biggest draw. Granted, a very, very distant second. But they need Jon Jones. They need GSP. They need Nick Diaz. It's going to be a very interesting few months to see how desperate they are and what they're going to do. Because without Ronda and Conor saying he's going to fight Floyd next, sounds like he's going to hold out for more money from the UFC or really try and get the Floyd fight. They've got nobody, really, that's a major draw. I mean, Jones's last fight, I think, only did 350,000 buys, and he'd be their top guy if you take out Connor for the year and if Ronda's really retired.
Yeah, this one actually kind of reminds me of old school Dana from like 10, 15 years ago, where he would say something and then just like backtrack on it because Dana operates, I mean, I keep saying it, but it's Trump. He operates in a news cycle. He operates as far as like whatever he's thinking right there at that moment, he lets it out. There's no filter on him. Like, it's not the objective truth, but it is absolutely Dana White's subjective truth. He's not trying to intentionally lie to people. And so when he says like, yeah, Jon Jones, fuck that guy. That motherfucker, he fucked us out of that money. We lost tens of millions of dollars. He won't main event again. And later on, when he's kind of cooled down, he thinks about it, like, yeah, he'll probably fight again in the main event because what are you going to fucking do? Like, Cormier or Johnson versus Gustafson? Like, no, it's going to be Jon Jones. It's just obvious because when push comes to shove, Dane is like, he's not an idiot. And he's going to be like, oh, if I do fight A, I'll make $1 million. If I do fight B with Jon Jones, I'll make $20 million. I wonder which one I'm going to fucking pick. I can gamble a lot at the MGM Grand there with a lot of hookers and whores and blow. Yeah, I'm going to do the more profitable one.
If you were White, what would you do with Jones? Would you just run it back, have him fight the winner of Rumble and Cormier in July once the suspension's up?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's over a year since Jones last fought, but there's nobody else to lay at heavyweight that's exciting me. And I want to see the best fight possible. And to me, Jones versus Rumble in particular would be the most interesting, but Jones and Cormier, I would be entertained by it. It would make me happy when I see the build up and all that shit. So that's what I would do.
It's time for the USADA failures.
Hold on. I'm going to hang up on you. That way I can stop the recording and put in the special bumper that I just created for USADA. Nobody needs to know this shit, so I'm going to hit pause.
Want me to say anything in particular?
No. We're going to go to the USADA news right now, everybody. Matt doesn't know what's happening.
This is 5 fucking stars!
It's USADA news.
Hello.
Let's wait for this to... Oh, there it is. Yes, everybody, you just heard the new and improved USADA bumper music that I created tonight, and Matt doesn't know what it is. Go on with USADA news.
We had another epic fail, as we could call it. Ricardo Abreu, like Atreyu from A NeverEnding Story. Do you know that movie?
I was thinking about like 13 different sports references, but sure, go with the dumb nerd one. That's not even nerd. That's like gay nerd.
Hang on. You've seen The NeverEnding Story.
No, I have not. And I've also never seen
That's like up your alley with all your dumbass comic book stuff.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen The Princess Bride either, because I think they're both really fucking weird. I haven't seen Goonies. I think a lot of the 80s movie shit is stupid, so fuck that shit.
How can you say that if you haven't even seen it?
I make a lot of judgments and decisions in life based on very little information, so I'm comfortable with myself.
Ricardo Abreu, The NeverEnding Story is a good movie. I'm having trouble getting past that. Could be facing a very lengthy ban from USADA. I believe this guy's only fought once in the UFC. He's a middleweight. He was already serving a doping suspension, and while he's on this 2-year suspension, he's actually failed another USADA drug test stemming from a December 21st sample collection. So he's going to be facing a second violation, essentially. Abreu is less than a year into his 2-year ban. He tested positive for anabolic steroid metabolites. This is my favorite part. Norandrosterone and 19 norethiocolanolone in June 2016. He's currently ineligible to compete in the UFC until 2018, which could easily be 2020 now with this second violation. And there's also an aggravating circumstances clause in the UFC anti-doping policy, which could lengthen the ban even more. Thoughts on Abreu?
Well, unfortunately for him, he's not the first guy to do this. There was, I can't think of his name right now, but he was supposed to fight in August. Got suspended, even though he never failed a test, but he said in advance, his pre-fight screener, he's like, yeah, I'm using this. I'm like, well, that's illegal. He's like, I didn't know it was illegal. And they still banned him because Utah is a fucking joke. This one, though, I mean, it's not on USADA. Clearly, Abreu is a fucking moron. Is there a more eloquent way to put that? He's on suspension. He probably thought they're not going to test. I don't know what he's thinking. I honestly don't know. I say this as someone that I'm not like an elite athlete, but I've been more or less competitive in jiu-jitsu for years now. And I look at it in the same way that I diet, which is if I know I'm going to compete in a couple months, I diet hard. But once the diet's over, I'm like, fuck that. I'm not eating any more chicken. I'm going to eat 3 pizzas, I'm going to drink everything I can, and I'm going to top it off with a bunch of cupcakes. To me, if you're banned from the UFC for using steroids, yeah, you train, you keep yourself as sharp as you can, but there's no need to be on steroids. Steroids kill you. They will shorten your life. They will fuck you up. So to be on them when there's zero competitive gain from them is insane, and the only explanation is that Brazilians are fucking stupid, and that's very racist sounding for people that don't understand that Brazil is not a race. But I don't know what the fuck's wrong with these guys, but they get it in their head. I've seen it so many times. People I personally know, multiple people, everyone, who are from Brazil, and they're like, yeah, I had to take a drug test, but I this guy said this would make me better if I took it. And, like, I think we kind of, like, as Americans, vastly overestimate the intelligence of your average Brazilian. Because in America, like, you know, your dumbass dropped out of grade school or high school still has, like, the ability to read and write and kind of understand. A lot of these guys from Brazil, they don't have any education. They are as dumb as a fucking human being could possibly be.
They may not be dumb. They're just not that well educated.
Well, that means they're dumb, in my opinion. They don't know what's going on, and they don't have the basic ability to spot a con. That's why they all end up getting taken advantage of by probably like one or two agents. They're like, no, 75% for an agent, totally normal. Don't think about it. And also, you can't talk to anybody about this because that would cause problems with the government. And they're all like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll give you 75% of my money, and I'll take, let somebody stick a needle in my ass. I don't know who they are, but he's better than the favela that I was in, and that's probably true for them, but still, whatever. It sucks.
The other guy who failed a second test while he was on suspension was a guy named George Sullivan, mm-hmm. who's American and Caucasian with bad tattoos. Like, he's got a whole sleeve of them. Two sleeves, it looks like, in the picture I'm looking at.
Nothing wrong with having a sleeve. I'm going to have a sleeve one day until my mom dies and I don't have to worry about it.
He said he failed his test over a misunderstanding about a fertility pill. Anyway, that's our USADA.
Poor son of a bitch, you know, his tick doesn't work and USADA just wants to rub it in. Pardon the pun.
Justin Ledette, a prospect at heavyweight, was also flagged by USADA today. So he was kind of had some potential, I thought, and was coming up. So he could be out for a year.
Don't
say
that.
Or maybe 17 months or maybe 22 months. Who knows?
He might just have a problem with erectile dysfunction, as many men have as they get older. There's nothing to be ashamed of, everybody. And, professional fighters who are full of testosterone, they spend all their testosterone beating people up. And when it comes time to perform for their woman, they're not sure if they can do it. And they fear the embarrassment of being a limp dick with their woman. And they don't know how to say, baby, it's not you, it's me, and be believable. So they take dick pills from, the 7-Eleven.
Speaking of embarrassments, World Series of Fighting seems like it's going to be in business a little while longer. I got the impression you hadn't seen the story, but... you'd have to look hard. It's World Series of Fighting. A group of 31 investors have gotten together and raised $25 million to purchase 60% of the company. To me, this seems like the investors are really just trying to buy the NBC sports time slot, is what it screams to me. But do you think this is a wise investment, $25 million for 60% of the World Series of Fighting?
I'm disappointed in our president. We've allowed some dipshit, I presume Muslim, to swindle good, hardworking white Christian men out of $25 million because they're stupid and they think that this has fucking value.
Can you imagine being in a group of 31 other people and throwing in $1 million for that?
I was at work the other day, or actually earlier today. I don't know when people are listening. It doesn't matter. And, like, they want to have a pizza party on a Friday. They're like, everybody bring, like, $5. There's, like, 7 or 8 fucking lawyers. And I'm like, yeah, this is a fucking joke. This isn't going to work. Like, I don't want to give money to these people. They can't. I don't trust 7 lawyers to successfully order 3 pizzas, let alone 31 people to invest millions of dollars into a business whose model is, we got NBC Sports Network, which is known for, English Premier League football and fly fishing on the weekdays. So, whatever. These people are fucking morons, and a fool and his money will soon be part, and it goes to show that some of the most successful people in the world are just lucky, unless you're from Scargo Cafe, in which it's all due to hard work and good food.
Aisling Daly has retired. She was a UFC women's fighter from Ireland. She's claiming she's retiring due to a brain scan abnormality. Apparently, she's had some sort of hemorrhage. She fought at 115 pounds, so it wasn't like she was getting hit that hard by big, strong women or men. Well, you would assume women or men. Do you think this might be the beginning of a new trend with all these brain scans and everything coming out about CTE, where fighters are going to either be more aware of the issue? Like, I'm thinking about John Fitch saying he had an issue a couple weeks back, and even Rashad Evans, who we're going to talk about in a minute here. It just seems to be more people are more conscious of this.
I've seen it in the NFL lately, where guys are just leaving in their mid-20s saying, I've had concussions, I don't need this. And
Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, Calvin Johnson. But even, like, no-name guys, I'm like, good for you, dude. That means you saved your money and did well with it. Which I honestly, from a non-giving-a-shit perspective, I'm like, oh, look at that. He made $5 million and didn't blow it all on hookers and blow. Huh. Loser. But he's got his money. I think that there are people who... This is where we get into the idea of, I don't actually know them, I'm just guessing and attributing motives to them, which I have no objective reason to do so. I think it's one of those things where people will look at their station in life and say, I'm in the UFC, I'm a cage fighter, but I'm not at the high level, and I'm not making really great money. And so instead of saying, I want to quit because of all those things, they can say, I'm leaving because my long-term health is more important to me. And everybody goes, well, look at that. My gosh, that's very courageous to give up your career in the UFC. But they're giving them, like, you know, $15,000 total and, like, $500 in Reebok gear. So they're not giving up a ton. I mean, Aisling Daly, what the fuck, Mickey McMickerson there. You know, she wasn't going to be anything big, so she can say, oh, I went out, and I'm not saying it's not true. I'm sure that she has some issues, but if she was making $10 million a fight, I don't think she'd be walking away. And so, same with the NFL. You know, the top-level guys are not being like, dude, guess what? I know I just won the Super Bowl. I was MVP, set a single-season touchdown record. But I had kind of a weird MRI. I'm done. No. Peyton Manning broke his neck, had it fused together, and still said, I got to come back and win one more. You know, Tom Brady has some sort of weird new age bullshit hippie diet just so he can compete, where he's never had a strawberry. Like, if Daly was making a lot of money, she'd be fighting more, and if she's not, she's getting out, and I credit her for doing so. She's, I think, inevitably better off in the long run, you know, not fighting. But I think this is kind of like the Brazilian tap, as they would say in jiu-jitsu.
I think as time goes on, we're going to see more of this. I mean, you know my feeling on it long term, but I think people are starting to realize you don't want to mess with your brain. It's like the one part of your body you can't heal and you can't fix. It's like once it's messed up, and you don't want to risk it. And I think as more people become conscious of that, it's just going to be more and more often. And I think the scans will get better, the MRIs will get better, the science will get better, and people are going to be like, whoa, let's hit the brakes here a little bit. There were a couple new fights announced, and I referenced this before. Rashad Evans has a fight at middleweight finally. He's going to fight at UFC 209 in Las Vegas against old Dan Kelly
from
Australia. He's scheduled. It's booked. This will be his debut at middleweight. And going back, if you remember, Evans was scheduled for two other fights, one in New York at UFC 205, and the New York State Athletic Commission pulled him. Then he was booked again in Ontario, I think, the next month, and was pulled by the Ontario Commission because they wouldn't license him either due to some MRI abnormalities, some issue with his brain. However, Vegas and Nevada seem to think he's okay and ready to go, and he wants to fight. So I guess his fight with Dan Kelly is going to happen. To me, it's a safe fight for Evans. It's not like Kelly's an elite guy. He's older. He's never really fought anybody decent. And it's a weird fight. It's not a name, but Evans hasn't fought in a few years. If you listen to Tim Kennedy, he has brain damage. So maybe this is the right fight for Rashad at this point.
Actually, in hindsight, I kind of feel bad for Rashad because we saw what Kelvin Gastelum did to Tim Kennedy, and Rashad would have been bigger and better probably. So he probably would have looked like a god at 185 pounds. I mean, I honestly, I don't even know if this fight's going to happen. It should happen, but...
Should it?
Well, I mean, no, I shouldn't say, you know what, it shouldn't happen. I can't say that. from like a perspective of athletic commission not giving a shit about people, it should happen. But most of them have so far, and if I'm Nevada, I don't want to be the one that's like, well, New York, and New York said no, and Toronto said no. But yeah, we'll let it go, because if something bad happens, that's a huge black mark on Nevada. But I also don't know all this shit that's going on with the medical tests, and maybe it's something that looked weird on one scan and not on another. But still, I mean, if fucking Ainsley Daly is going to retire, and she probably doesn't have the shit that Rashad does. Rashad's got money, I think, unless he's an idiot. So, I don't know, dude. Just sit at home, smoke weed, drink booze, and watch TV. I don't know what the fuck's wrong with these people. Like, you have enough money to live the dream, man. Buy, like, a 700-square-foot place in Deadwood, South Dakota. Not be bothered by anyone. Just have, you know, satellite TV. People deliver food and booze to you. That's the life, man. I don't know what's wrong with these guys.
We also have Josh Koscheck making his long, much-anticipated Bellator debut. He's fighting a guy named Mauricio Alonso in a welterweight fight on February 18th of Bellator 172 in San Jose. That's the show headline with Fedor versus Matt Mitrione. Do you have any interest in seeing Koscheck fight again? Because I don't.
No.
On Saturday night, we have UFC Fight Night coming up this weekend. I believe it's the only big show. It's the only show I could find that really mattered. There's no WSOF or Bellator. So this one's on February 4th, the day before the big football game. It's coming from the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas. In the main event, we've got Dennis Bermudez versus the Korean Zombie, Chan Sung-young. Thoughts on that fight?
It's a cop-out, but I don't have any.
Okay. It should be an exciting fight. It's an action fight, yeah?
I can't even say that. I love Dennis Bermudez. I think he's looked really good in his UFC career. He only has one loss, actually, at featherweight in his recent run. He had lost to Diego Brandao. He had the loss to, what's his face from Iowa? Who knocked him up with a flying knee, but that was
Jeremy Stevens,
but that was at actually a catchweight fight because Stevens missed weight. So he has like one loss. He looks really good. I love the way he fights. I think he's a great fighter. The Korean Zombie is a legend. He's had some of the greatest fights of all time, but he's been gone for 2+ years. And in those 2 years, he was serving the Korean military because Korea's military state. I don't really know why, but whatever, it's their culture, which we just say, it's your culture, you know, we're gonna let it go. I think it's fucking weird, but that's how the Koreans like to do things, and we're all like, oh yeah, the Koreans do it that way. That sucks for us, and I'm glad that he defended Korea from, you know, all of those wars they were involved in the past 2 years. But I have no idea what he has to offer, so to me it's then Bermudez's fight to lose. He's fresh, he's probably a better fighter anyways, and he didn't spend 2 years doing bullshit military exercises like Chan Tung Young did.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a long layoff. Who knows what Zombie's been doing the last few years, and Bermudez has been a top featherweight the last 3 years while Zombie's been out. So, yeah, I would favor Bermudez too, but if anything, I'd expect it to be a fun fight, at the very least, on paper. In the semi-main event, we've got Alexa Grasso versus Felice Herrig. Kind of a good fight for Grasso because Herrig's not exactly lighting the world on fire. And Grasso is kind of an up-and-coming name that they're trying to build from Mexico. Thoughts on that one?
It's beauty versus beauty. That's why they booked the fight. We saw, you know, Grasso's looked good at times, but I still think she might be a little undersized. But Felice Herring, you know, she's kind of like the original version of an MMA woman who made a conscious effort to sell herself as a sex symbol. People knew her for a long time just based on her looks and what she had to offer in that department. She's not a bad fighter or anything. I always see Grasso as being undersized. I think I just said that. So it's probably Grasso's fight to win, but, you know, anything could happen.
Yes, anything could.
Sure.
Also on the card, we've got Abel Trujillo versus James Vick. OSP's fighting some Russian guy. Anthony Hamilton is fighting a guy. And the opener's Jessica Andrade versus Angela Hill.
Yes.
This is a good strawweight fight for sure. Andrade has looked really good at strawweight and could be in line for a title shot. Hill got booted from the UFC, won the Invicta strawweight title, and is now back in the UFC after some weird USADA shenanigans. So that's a good opener. There's some name value on this card for Fox Sports 1 card. It's not bad. It's not great. It's probably somewhere in the middle. But a few interesting fights on the show anyways.
Yeah, I mean, it's the day before Brother Brian, one of the three-headed monsters that founded this website's birthday. He will be turning 32. So good for him, I guess. I don't know. I already did
32. Happy birthday.
Hey, I already did 32, motherfucker.
So, how was it?
The same as 31 and 33. I got 34 coming up in 11 days. I mean, this is one of those shows where if it didn't exist and they combined it with UFC 208, you'd be like, oh, 208 is a really deep-ass card.
Right.
What am I going to do? I can't complain about having free fights to watch on a Saturday night. Korean Zombie and Dennis Bermudez is a really good fight. Grasso and Felice Herring, you know, there's just a lot of stuff on the card where I'm like, no, this is not UFC 205 or 200 or 100 or whatever the fuck you want to have as your great card of all time, but just remember UFC 206, a card headlined by one of the UFC's earliest joke interim titles, but it also had one of the greatest fights in UFC history in Superboy versus Cub Swanson. So maybe this will be the same. Cards of all stripes, all shapes, and all sizes are so different, and you never know. You know, I've seen cards where on paper I'm like, this can't miss, and it was just balls awful. And I've seen cards on paper where I'm like, I don't know, and they were balls great. So hopefully this is balls great.
I hope so. As far as stuff goes balls this week, I prefer balls great, though.
Homo.
I thought we could mix the MMA and stuff up this week a bit. What are your thoughts on Trump's travel ban? But hang on, and how it could affect Gegard Mousasi. There's a tie-in here. Mousasi is of Iranian descent. I believe he's got dual citizenship or something. And he's claiming he has concerns about getting into the United States for his fight with Chris Weidman in Buffalo at UFC 209. Obviously, there's a lot going on there with Trump and Obama's former previous policy, and whether it's a Muslim ban or certain countries, or if Trump has certain business interests in the Middle East and didn't ban those countries because he's got businesses there. There's a ton of baggage, and it's hard to know what's reality and what's BS. But do you think this actually will have any effect on any UFC fighters from any of those countries or fighters who have backgrounds in those countries?
None whatsoever.
Okay. Gegard's safe.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, he's safe. The way the policy is written, you know, they pretty much explicitly say super-duper nice guys who are really good get an exemption, and that'll just be the case here.
Sure.
If people want to go into the ins and outs of the constitutionality of the order, I'm happy to do so. From an MMA perspective, if it keeps out anybody who's somewhat tied to Armenia, fucking love you, Trump. Make America great again, motherfucker.
As far as the ban in general, constitutional, not constitutional, what's your take?
From a 100% purely legal perspective, I believe that the order is constitutional.
Okay.
1952 Act gave the president basically the ability to say, these group of people are not good, I can keep them out. It's the one thing, you know, when people talk about the separation of powers, the one thing that the executive office as a general rule has control over is international relations, and that would encompass people, you know, coming into the country or not. I think that there is a possibility of a challenge to those people who have green cards or a permanent residency who are not necessarily citizens, but they have a higher standard to keep them out. But as for refugees and all that, it's kind of at the president's discretion. He can do these things. People may not like it, but I don't think it's unconstitutional. It may be immoral. It may be the wrong decision. It may be something that I would not personally do. But I think that it is likely constitutionally permitted.
Yeah, it's crazy just the hysteria around both sides of it. I mean, my basic take is this. I don't think most people from any country are terrorists or they're trying to kill me. I think there are bad people in the world who do bad things, but I'm not going to pigeonhole any certain group. I like to base my opinions of people on the person, whether it's a racial thing, a nationality thing, or a religion thing. To me, like, that's kind of irrelevant. Anybody can be an asshole. you know what I mean? So,
well, yeah, obviously I'm living proof of that.
Right. You're white, you're a lawyer, and you're a jerk, but it doesn't mean all white lawyers are jerks.
Yes, it does. But yeah, I mean, what you're saying is a general rule.
Just the hysteria on both sides is crazy because it's like you're going to ban all these countries. Not everybody in all those countries is bad. Like, there's been minimal. Granted, there might be thwarted attacks we don't know about, and there's been things going on behind the scenes that the public doesn't know about. Maybe there have been threats from these countries that haven't been publicized. Like, I get that. But at the same time, I don't want to say nothing's happened, but nothing's really happened for many of these countries on U.S. soil. Like, serious.
Here's the thing. On U.S. soil, it's fair to say nothing's really bad happened, but we've also allowed very few actual quote-unquote refugees. But you look at Europe, and it's fucking out of control. I mean, Germany is in a real crisis because they have a lot of refugees, and these are people who are, you know, one, they're connected to something. Yes, when I say some, it's a very low number. But, you know, the terrorist attacks in Berlin and Paris and Nice and all these places, I think it was Nice, you know, they're refugee connected. But it's more than that. There's just something about the lack of assimilation. But I don't think it applies in the United States. I wrote a column. I actually wrote it in 2015. I just republished it about why I think it's appropriate for us to take in refugees. But there's also the thing is they're not citizens of the United States. And it sounds really dumb. Could we kind of like forget that? But like literally what? Half the world lives on less than $2 a day or something like that. They all need help.
Mm-hmm.
That's what? Three and a half billion people need help. They need food and all this stuff. The United States just logistically can't take them all in. So there's always going to be a limit to the number of people who are in shit conditions that America can admit within her borders. And I think Trump handled it inappropriately. I thought he could have done it better.
Weird.
But at the same time, it's one of those people complain about the style and not the substance. What he's substantively doing isn't really radical or crazy. I mean, seriously.
Right.
If you look at the seven countries that are on the list. Oh, my gosh. Oh, Somalia, Libya, Iran, Iraq. Oh, I can't believe we can have people from there. Like, who the fuck wants a fucking Iranian to move next door to them? Nobody wants that shit. It's just insane. But, you know, so, again, people, it's been explained elsewhere, these seven countries were previously identified. It was during the Obama administration. I don't know if it was Obama that did it, but nonetheless, it's not like these countries were picked out at random. And if Trump really hated Muslims, you know, there's Indonesia,
right,
Pakistan. There's a lot of places he could say, I don't know, they can't come in here because I hate Muslims. To me, this is, I think it's political grandstanding on his part. I don't think he needed to do it. I think that, again, he's looking for credit.
Yeah, and he's also delivering what he promised. I mean, he said we're gonna do this, and he's doing what he said. Again, to a certain degree, I respect it because he's not fucking around. He's doing what he said he would do. At the same time, I don't agree with him. I think it's short-sighted, and I think if there's people in the world who are like literally dying and we can help them and still be safe, we should do what we can to do that. I guess it's done at this point. There's not a lot that can be changed at the moment. I'm sure somebody will challenge it somehow, but I don't know. It just came off bad. And there's a lot of people on the right saying Obama did the exact same thing. If Obama did it, I think it's wrong too. Granted, it didn't get any publicity, but he didn't sign it in front of a ton of people and wave it around in a room with a bunch of cameras either. So it's weird. The whole thing, to me, it's kind of complicated, and it's very a lot of different shades of gray, and it's a nuanced topic. And honestly, I don't even know, after reading a lot about it, I still don't even really know completely where I stand on it. I mean, morally, it sounds bad, but at the same time, maybe there's more stuff than we know that's going on. Maybe there's a bigger reason for it. Maybe there has been threats, and it doesn't get out because it's CIA serious shit that the public shouldn't know about and can't know about.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you look at the countries, these aren't countries who are like, oh, he banned Finland or something like that. Like, it's Iran, Iraq, right. Somalia, Syria, Libya. It's like, well, fucking hell. course you would ban those places. They're hotbeds of terrorism. I mean, they're 100% ISIS comes from exactly those regions. It's like, duh. And it's for 90 whole days, 3 months. Look, the one thing I don't like at all. What the fuck did you say, Syria? Hey, Siri, Olivia, fucking help course you do playing these places at of terror saw the 100%. I pretend I didn't hear that. Fuck you, Siri, you piece of shit. But I don't like keeping anybody who has a legal right to be in the United States. And that to me would be green card holders or permanent residents.
Sure.
Because they've already undergone vetting processes.
Right.
But after that, people don't want to say anything because if you say, look, we have to reevaluate the standards, that therefore implicitly states that President Obama didn't do a good job with the vetting. His standards in place weren't up to snuff.
Right, but that's where it gets back to, like, the hysteria. Like, what happened that was so outrageous? Do you know what I mean? Like, in the States, like, nothing happened.
I don't get where everyone's
all worked up about terrorism and stuff. And, like, granted, it's a threat. There's people who want to do the United States harm. I get it. And you shouldn't wait until an attack to react. You should vet people. I'm not saying don't vet them and just let everybody in here. I get it. But it's just, like, hysterical on both sides. It's, like, so blown out of proportion that, like, okay, change the process to let people into the country. That's fine. Do we have to turn down every refugee who's, like you see the pictures of the Syrian kids drown in the river and stuff, and it's like, oh, my God, we should be doing something to help these people. We've got the ability to help them and save these kids, and it's like, we're going to let more kids and families die for 3 months? It's like, I don't know. I don't like that part of it at all, and I have a hard time getting past that.
Which is fair, and I can't fault you for that. But I just go back to the point I said before, which is there are hundreds of millions, if not billions, of children like that.
Yeah, no, I get it.
And it's just there's a limit to what America can do. These are systemic issues which need to be fixed within these countries. And in a weird way, the more open we are immigration wise, the more we hurt these countries, because
I think there's different than, like, a war-torn country and just a poor, impoverished one.
Oh, yeah, and I agree, and I'm in favor of people who are actually, you know, minorities in their country that are being persecuted and killed, whether it's racial, sexual, religious minorities. It sucks. We're America. We're the good guys. Again, there's a limit to how much we can do. We're 1/20th of the, we're not that big in the world stage. But it's just a shit-ass situation. There's no winning. There's no good guys. There's no bad guys. And I think everybody, you know, lost their fucking minds. Like he said, these 7 places, which had previously been identified as bad dude places to live, it didn't mean that, you know, Obama was right then, but it also, to me, says that it's not like Trump is acting from some sort of weird, totally irrational position. If it was, again, he would have banned Indonesia and Malaysia and Pakistan and all these places. He specifically picked 7 countries where, if you told your average person these people can't come here, you'd be like, well, fuck, yeah. I mean, these are places like, seriously.
No, I get it.
If you say Somalia in your head, what is the first word that comes after Somalia?
Pirates?
Genocide.
Ah, damn it.
It's either
I saw that Tom Hanks movie.
I mean, see, the pirates are genocide. Like, people know, oh, Somalia had a genocide. Iran, you're thinking, religious wackos. Iraq, you're like, terrorists. Syria, terrorists. And again, it's 90 days, it's 3 months. Yes, right. There's, but there will be isolated cases where people are harmed, and I don't support it. I wouldn't have done it if I was president, but
there is a sound argument for it. I'm not gonna say you can't argue it. Like you said, it wouldn't have been something I would have done either.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's a lot of things to get upset about. There's a lot of places where, not just Trump, but any president, members of Congress and so on, overstep their bounds. I think that they infringe on our basic civil liberties. To me, this is one of those things where people are like, hey, it looks like he hates brown people, and he's racist, and all these things. And I'm not saying that Trump isn't those things, but this one is...
It's a little more complicated.
Yeah, and the moment anything becomes truly nuanced and people speak in absolutes, you know they're wrong. It's just not how the world works.
Any thoughts on Trump? I guess you didn't get the Supreme Court nod. I was surprised.
Motherfucker.
I thought that was your big break. It didn't come through, obviously. Do you know anything about Gorsuch, or do you care? First of all, can we back up? Was it okay for them not to go through with Obama's choice? Like, how can that even happen? Like, a Supreme Court justice dies, and you go like a year without replacing them? How does that even work?
All right. Are you asking me legally or ethically?
Surprise me.
Legally, the Senate had the right to not
vote?
I would say rubber stamp anybody that Obama presented.
Like if it was a Democratic Congress, though, a Democratic Senate, it would have gone right through, right?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Which is, I mean... That's a classic lawyer answer for everything is, it depends. Like, you learn that, right. Like, law school 101. The Senate is to advise and consent, which historically and by, I think, most reasonable readings of the text is they have to approve the president's appointment to the Supreme Court. We have since evolved to the point where we have allowed a filibuster where if you don't have 60 votes in the Senate, it won't go forward. That is a procedural matter. They can change those rules, and it's called the quote-unquote nuclear option, because everybody knows it just means you need 51 votes to get anything through. And if that's, you know, if we go by the 60-vote rule, it would have been tough. I think that a president has a right to have his nominee heard, to have them vetted and have a vote on them, yay or nay. But I don't think the Senate is under an obligation to absolutely do so. I think it's that their kind of their desire, their willingness or whatever. So, I while I think that Obama's nominee deserved in a hearing and a vote, I don't think it was constitutionally required that it happen.
But, like, what if it was year one of Obama's term, not year four?
If it was year one...
How long could they drag it out? Like, okay. What if two more justices died?
Okay.
Like, they both were walking across the street and got hit by a car. They were down three justices and you just go with six? Like, I don't know.
One, there's no specified number of judges in the Constitution.
Right.
This goes back to FDR's Time Saved 9. He was going to pass the Supreme Court and said, well, if these nine won't vote for me, I'll bring in six more that will, or some shit like that, which, good job, FDR, you cock. I've actually kind of discussed this a little bit before, and not on this show, on Facebook, which matters. Here's the thing. The president nominates somebody to be for any position. We'll say Supreme Court, the 7th District, the 7th Circuit here in Chicago, whatever. It doesn't matter. He says, I want this guy to be my judge in South Dakota. And if the Senate says, we are not going to vote on this, we're not going to say yes, but we're not going to say no. They just refuse to do it. The Senate then goes into recess. And we permit recess appointments for judges and any number of positions that the president is permitted to nominate someone. So Obama, if it happened in his first term, could have nominated anybody. He could have nominated, you know, I don't know, Charles Manson to be Supreme Court nominee. And the Republicans would have filibustered it and said, we're not going to vote on it, yes or no. But when they were in recess, when they were away from their job, Obama has the legal authority to appoint a recess appointment. When you appoint a recess appointment, that individual fills the spot, in this case a Supreme Court position, until Congress reconvenes and then has a chance to say yes or no, which is generally about a year. So all they would have done is blocked it, but had the guy come into power and then have to fight the same battle over and over and over and over and over again for several years. The Senate doesn't want to do that. When it came to the recent pick by Obama, because everybody knew that no matter what, he was gone about 6 months after he announced his pick, they could say, fuck that, we can just filibuster this. He'll be gone, and then we see whoever's next, if it's Hillary or Trump, will judge that candidate on their merits. I think for the first time, probably in 10 years president, Trump made a very, very smooth and shrewd pick. I don't like the guy, only because I hate anything where it's like, oh yeah, he went to Columbia, Harvard, Yale, Oxford, and he did 37 internships and all this stuff. And to me, the elitism of these people is more dangerous than, oh, he likes guns or he hates guns. He likes abortion. He hates abortion. I'm like, no, this fucker's like, he went to Columbia and Harvard and Yale and all these things. And he clerked for 2 Supreme Court justices. Fuck you. It's all part of the same elite bullshit. Even if the guy might rule the way I think he quote-unquote should, I think when you have these guys who are so removed from the regular world, you know, people like you and I, you know, for you and I would bet going to Dairy Queen on a Friday night with the family, pretty fucking good night. You're like, yeah, I had a Sunday, it was pretty good, I went to sleep, I got to wake up in the morning, watch a little cartoons, we're all good. Meanwhile, we have these fuckers who are so isolated from that. They're like, wait, Dairy Queen? Is that a homophobic slur? What is that about? And I can't stand the elites, whether they're right or left. I just hate the elites of the world.
What do you think justices should have, like, this lifetime term where they can serve as long as they want? You're okay with that?
Yes, because...
Okay. Are you in favor of term limits or no?
No, I'm not.
Me neither.
Because I think if people like
everybody makes fun of me when I say that.
Like, to me, but if people want to vote for a guy, they can vote for a guy.
No shit. To me, it's like totally undemocratic. Like, yeah I get there can be cronyism and all that. Like the shit with FDR and everything. Like, I get it, but the people have the power to vote them out.
Yeah, like I don't. It's one of those things where if it happens, I'm not going to be, like, unhappy or upset.
Yeah.
I'll be like, fine, whatever, it happens. But I think, you know...
To me, the inconsistency of it's weird, too. Like, a president can serve 2 terms. Senators and congressmen can serve as long as they want. And so can Supreme Court justices. It's just odd. Why the president? And some people are so pro-term limits, like... It's gonna like help the government so much, but if there's somebody good in there and they're representing your district or your state or whatever well, and people like them, keep him in there as opposed to electing another guy who might be a total screw up who's going to make things worse.
Yeah, to me, it's one of those weird deals where there's a difficulty, I would say, bridging reality with philosophy. Like, philosophically, it doesn't matter. People want to elect whoever they want to elect. Good for them. In reality, so many people get reelected, and it's just bullshit because they're in a safe seat. Then, you know, if you're a black guy running for office as a Democrat in Chicago, you're good forever. If you're a white guy from Kentucky, you're good forever. And it's just stupid. But again, if the people like the guy, so be it. And I like that we have so many odd checks on how long you can run for. You know, if you're in either house of Congress, run forever. President, you get 2 terms. If you're Supreme Court, you're there forever. So we have these very people with different perspective, different motivations. And I think it's one of the things that makes America so unique and so much better than every other country, USA, USA, is that we have so many legitimate checks and balances. You know, we have the president can't do whatever he wants because Congress and Supreme Court keeps him in line. If the president wants to impose martial law across the United States, there are 50 governors who all are in control of 50 National Guard units, and they can just say, fuck you, we got guns too. Like, the less power that any one person has in the world, I think the better it is long term.
Sounds fair to me. Last week I meant to ask you about it. There was a video all over the internet with...
That wasn't me, and I don't know who that horse was.
With some right-wing, people call him a Nazi, a neo-Nazi or whatever. But he was doing an interview like on a sidewalk about whatever, white stuff. And
Richard Spencer.
Yes, thank you, Richard Spencer, yeah. He was the guy who was getting people to do Hail Trump at that conference in D.C., I think. Anyway, he got basically sucker punched by some dude on the sidewalk. In your opinion, is it okay to sucker punch a Nazi?
No.
I agree. We're doing good philosophically today. This is nice.
I think that free speech...
You should never sucker punch anybody.
Well, I mean, that's true, but to me, free speech is the single most important thing and most important right we have.
Sure.
And look, Richard Spencer's a fucking piece of shit. He just is. I mean, he's just stupid. He's a fucking moron. He has nothing to offer the world. There's nothing intellectually engaging about him. Fuck him. But I always come back to the idea that what we think is the absolute right thing to do today is not necessarily true. 100 or 200 years ago, if somebody said, yeah, we're going to let the Negroes and the women vote, people would be like, are you out of your fucking mind? They would not have just said that it was dumb. They would have said it was immoral. It was against the natural order of the world. All the things we say today for why it's okay to punch a white supremacist dick face in the head, and I know it's beyond absurd. It will never happen, but say he's right. What if it turns out that when you died, you go up to heaven and God's like, all right, here's the first rule. White people are really good. Black people suck. You'd be like, are you fucking serious? You'd be like, I gave you all the hints. The blacks committed all the crimes. Didn't you see that happening? And people are like, what about, like, you know, Bernie Sanders or Bernie Madoff? It's got to be like, there's just one white dude versus all the black guys. They're big. So, in theory, there's a possibility that the white supremacist is right. I don't think it's very realistic. But if he is right, if that is the actual way that we should live life, if we all... Because, again, all the racists 100 years ago were just as confident, just as certain that a black man was not a human being, that he could not be charged to vote properly or to do anything the right way. They were just as steadfast in their beliefs as people are today that a neo-Nazi should be punched in the face. But in 200 years, if somebody's like, we cracked the genome, and it turns out that black people, they're just hairless apes with better speaking ability. It's insane. It's impossible. It will never happen. But if it is the truth, and we deny the truth, if we deny an idea because it upsets our current view of the world, we deny the chance that that idea could maybe be real. And there's been so many ideas that are radical and extreme that we now see as so mainstream we don't even think about it. Gay rights, black rights, women's rights. I mean, fuck it. For fuck's sake, look through the history of the world and see how white, black, brown, yellow, whatever, fucking red, the whole colors of the wheel said about women. And it was always the same in every culture, which is, women are good, but they're just not cut out for this shit. Because somebody had the idea in their head of, they're just different. So, don't fucking punch someone for what they say. It just makes you look like an asshole.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of hitting people. In general.
He says on MMA and stuff.
That's two willing participants who know what they're getting into. You just don't walk up and punch somebody because they're talking. No matter what they're saying, it's like, keep your hands off it. Keep your hands to yourself. I say that to my kids. Then this weekend we've got the Super Bowl. Have you heard about that? It's a football game.
Oh, that's what they're talking about. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we've got the New England Patriots versus the Atlanta Falcons coming at you. I think kickoff's like 6:25 usually, some oddball time between 6 and 7 on Sunday.
5:25.
Oh, yeah, Chicago time. To me, the one moment to look forward to for me is if the Patriots win, the moment where Goodell's got to get up on that weird makeshift stage with Belichick and Brady and probably hand one of them the Super Bowl trophy. Granted, both sides are saying, oh, it's not a big deal. There's no hard feelings. But after those legal battles about Brady's balls, there's got to be some hard feelings. I mean, Brady had his reputation tarnished, whether you thought he was cheating or if that really was cheating, whatever people's thoughts are on that, his rep took a hit for sure. So it'll be a very interesting moment. And the thing I'm really most looking forward to, I've watched the Patriots my whole life, but I don't really care if they win another Super Bowl. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it either way, if they win or lose, but I will be disappointed if I don't get to see that moment where he hands the trophy to Brady.
Yeah, it's a weird game because the Patriots are arguably one of the top five franchises in the company, the sport.
The company. Yeah. It is a company.
Yeah.
Sort of.
The Falcons, they're kind of one of these teams where like everybody was like, yeah, they got some good points and got some good players, but they kind of fail a lot. They're not quite elite. And it just seems like it's set up for a Patriots massacre. You just have the Belichick going to full crazy-ass mode where he's like, I got 2 weeks to fucking prepare. You think they're going to do anything I don't know? I'm going to do it. I'm going to know it all. I'm going to have improved on their shit. And honestly, kind of from a 100% neutral observer's point of view, if the Falcons win the Super Bowl, it'll be like when the Rams won it with the greatest show on turf. Yeah, we kind of remember a little bit. We don't really give. Like, I think, Tampa Bay, I think they won a Super Bowl. I think. And the fact that I say I think says a lot about their fucking
win. I think they did, too.
It'll be the same.
I feel like they beat the Raiders or something.
That may have been in 2002, them versus the Raiders. It'll be the same thing with the Falcons. It'll be like, no one gives a shit about you. Yeah, next year I would care, because next year they'll have a fancy new stadium and blah, 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 blah. But right now, to me, it's all about the Patriots and Tom Brady. Whether I want them to win or not, I want them to be involved in it because it's a story. And I know their players, and I just kind of, they're just a more, oddly enough, a more relatable team, just because I know their coach, I know their quarterback, and I know whatever, you know, fifth string tight end they brought in that Brady makes look like a god. So, you know, I'm not going to bet against Bill Belichick in particular.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's funny? I mean, the Patriots don't even have Gronk. He's been out half of the season. He's not going to play in the Super Bowl. And obviously he's been their biggest offensive threat the last 6 or 7 years probably at this point. Still, the Patriots are the favorite. Still with, like, they've got a good defense. It's not one of their better ones, like the 04 and 05 teams. Those defenses were what won them a lot of games. It wasn't so much Brady back then, even more so in 01, but those defenses they had back then were crazy. This isn't one of those defenses. It's good. They never break. They don't give up a lot of points, but they'll give up chunks of yards and some field goals, and they're playing a really good offense, obviously, in the Falcons. But to me, the question point, the big factor in this game is going to be, can the Falcons' defense stop the Patriots? The Patriots put up a lot of points this year, too, and that's without Gronk. They just find a way to do it, whether it's these small little slot receivers or they get a new tight end. They just always find a way to move the ball and not take a lot of risks and not have a lot of turnovers. And I don't know how good the Falcons' defense is. I don't think they're going to be able to stop
them. Yeah, like, I kind of look at it as the Falcons are the very flashy team. They, especially in offense, they have so many weapons in their arsenal. They're so spectacular. And their defense is good, but their offense overwhelms it all. So you kind of like, they're like a bright star. But you go against the Patriots and, you know, 1-22 or 25, whatever the fucking roster is. Belichick has all of them working at peak efficiency. And they're all on the same page. And so it's truly the difference between a team versus a bunch of individuals. And, you know, fucking all credit to Belichick. It's again, it's horseshit. It's a cop-out. We talked about earlier with fights and stuff like that. But until you prove me wrong, Belichick is the dude. And, yeah, the New York football Giants did it. But that's because, you know, ugly face McManning has a weird power about him. Still, it's the fucking Patriots in the Super Bowl every other year for the past 2 decades. So I'll go with the Patriots.
Me too.
I can hear you typing up at this shit, aren't you?
Sorry. No, I was typing. You can really hear that?
I am.
Do you always? Because oftentimes I'm typing.
I'm just a very intelligent individual who pays attention to things.
Yeah, I mean, this mic, there's like different settings on it. You can have it like record like everything in a room or just forward. Maybe I change the setting or something. Anything else going on? Anything pressing you need to discuss?
Let's see.
Do you have anything to bring to the table this week?
No, of course not. February 5th, I think, is Sunday. Is
yes.
Brother Brian, one of the three-headed monsters running the site. It's his birthday.
You mentioned that, yep.
Oh, and February 11th is mine. So I can mention that. Yeah, I get Holly Holm and Deronda May. So clearly the universe doesn't like me. Yep, nothing else really going on.
Okay, I think that covers it. We talked MMA, we talked some stuff, talked about refugees. Not the refugee all-stars with Wyclef. Do you remember them?
No, I wasn't allowed to listen to black people.
The Fugees?
Honestly, I didn't really give a fuck about them. I understand people like them.
But they were big. They sold like 10 million albums. They were a big deal.
Fuck.
Yeah, The Score? That was a big album.
Well, good for you,
what's the name of the chick? Lauren Hill.
She went crazy.
Did she?
Yeah, you should Google her. She went pretty batshit. And like now she does these concerts in like really small venues and shows up 3 hours late and people throw stuff at her.
I can't wait to buy a ticket to her show then.
It'll be like seeing Jason Knight at the UCW Arena. Anyways, thanks for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. I'm Matt. That was Mike. We'll talk to you next week. See you later.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about. We all